Good morning to you. This is Down to Brass Tacks with you up until 2 o'clock today. I'm David Ellis. With me as the technical operator and producer is Michelle Brathwaite. So that's the first person that you will speak with when you call here to get an opportunity to express your point of view on matters of national interest. Call us at 4341790. And I think this morning I'm going to come straight to the telephone. No real preamble. You set the stage for today's program. Whoever you are, this first caller of the day, a regular or an irregular? Let me find out. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. This is the in-between caller.
Yes, I can't designate you as regular.
No, definitely not. This is Adrian Donovan calling.
Yes. Good morning.
I want to start the program this morning on a very positive note. As you are aware, today is the first day back to school for some primary schools. And I'm here this morning at the lovely, newly renovated St. Lawrence Primary School, freshly painted. So this morning I'm calling ready to give much kudos to the probation department, especially community officer Eleanor Rice, who is famous camp manager. You remember that name, Mr. Ellis?
I'm aware, yes.
Yeah, she's the lady in charge of getting 8 young men and 2 young women who were designated to do community work by Magistrate Garvey Bannister. And instead of going up and spending some time up at Dodge, they were assigned to paint the school, including the bathrooms, the inside outside, also the hallways, and it has been a tremendous job. I also want to pay a special tribute to Cafe Sol, who donated the paint, and especially the principal of the St. Lawrence School, who unfortunately is retiring at the end of this term. So I want to give kudos to Ms. Rice, Information Department, Mr. Ellis, for doing a wonderful job at St. Lawrence Primary School, saving the military education thousands of dollars, and I will look forward to seeing this trend continue in the future instead of sending our young offenders to do hard labor. I think the energy could be better spent than doing similar projects like this, keeping our schools in good shape.
Well, you need to recognize, though, that there are many parents out there who have serious questions about back to school.
Of course.
People have been holding various meetings, and from what I am gathering, there are serious reservations about going back to school at this time. And it's a natural thing for parents to be worried about their children. I really believe that it is necessary for the Ministry of Education to come and speak with people directly, not just, you know, within one school, but to have a session where they actually speak with the country as a whole and answer some of the people's questions and concerns, because they are real. And, I appreciate that they've been working hard to deal with this very difficult situation, but it is, to my mind, necessary to communicate with the people in a different way.
But I guess under normal circumstances, a town hall meeting at the respective schools would be the best way to go. But no, in this situation, now this climate, you know, everybody's doing Zoom meetings.
Well, whatever they do, there's a need to have that kind of broad attempt to communicate with the people, because there's a lot of concern. All right?
Definitely.
Yes.
But what I could actually say, this particular school and some schools I have seen, and they spent the last couple of weeks sanitizing inside, outside, especially bathrooms.
Well, you know, that's not enough. It's all about the protocols. It's all about the fact that children will be children. And,
yes,
you know,
yes.
So those are the concerns that people have about it. All right.
Let me just keep on. Fingers crossed, Mr. Ellis, and hope that everything turns out to be the best.
Well, thank you very much for calling. You're the first caller today. Hello. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning.
I have a few concerns here about this. The picketing that was done in front of the American Embassy on the week, during the week.
Yeah, what are your concerns?
My concern is that we should be picketing for the people in St. John, St. Andrew, St. Joseph that can't get water. We should be picketing about the garbage, the recycling.
So why you don't start the picket?
Me?
The other people have determined what they want to picket about. You have decided that you believe they should be picketing about other things. Why you don't get up and go and picket?
I'm too young.
But then you want them to picket for you, right?
No, as usual. No, my dear.
Typical of us. So who is to picket for you?
Who is to picket for me?
Yes.
Well, I ain't doing nothing for nobody to picket for me.
So tell me, all the water, the garbage, the this, the that you believe we should be picketing about.
Right.
Let me ask you.
And the recycling and all of that sort.
And who is to do it?
And the people that the houses, the poor people in Barbados that need housing and all that, we should be picketing about. Will we be going picketing for a country like America for? Give me a break, please.
Well, you know.
You think that them going picket for 166 square miles? If anything happened to you down here? Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Listening to some of you just...
Ten people is to be picketing at a time. Ten. T-E-N. So if the police say ten, what are we going to profit from out of that? What are we going to profit?
I have no doubt that there are people out there who see it exactly your way, that the notion of solidarity and that sort of thing. And I can tell you something. Let's face this reality. At the end of the day, you get support or no support depending upon who you are in Barbados. Once you see David Denny and his group, there are people who are going to say, not me and that. I have no interest in that. But if you get some people from the churches, especially the Pentecostal churches, and them setting up a similar movement, it will be a completely different matter. It is a question of who you are. And I am clear in my mind about this. You know, we love to demonize certain people. Put them in a little box. We don't do anything ourselves. Once they do it, you have to demonize it. You have to put them away. You have to demonstrate that they are not fit to do anything. Well, you can't look to anybody else to mount anything of that nature. No protest, no solidarity, no voicing of concerns. Very few people in the country are like that. Barbadians, as you well know, we are people who like to keep quiet and grumble behind people's backs. That's how we operate. So I am on this side of saying, look, I really don't see anything wrong with showing solidarity, because I can tell you this, racism does not begin and end in the United States of America. And if you look carefully at your own country, Barbados, you will see that there are elements of what we know as racism, because like South Africa, putting power in the hands of a black majority does not mean that you erase your colonial past. And every election in this country, I hear some issue that is raised that reminds us of that reality. But you know what? A majority of people in this country would prefer not to face it, to sweep it under the carpet, and to buy into the notion that all is well. So we have nothing to... Look, we got so many Barbadians living in the United States. so many people who are going through the experience of having to live with racism in that country. You mean you can't even show solidarity for them? What do you think? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. I'm a first-time caller.
Pleasure to have you.
Okay, I am one of the Barbadians that was living in the United States. I have 3 kids left back there and 6 grandkids.
How long you live there?
30-something years. I forgot the counting now.
You came back home when?
I came back in 2012.
Right. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, on Friday when I heard that they're going to have a solidarity march, I was all hyped to go and march. But once I heard the numbers, I said, well, that's not a march, actually. So I heard from the attorney general, I heard what he said, it's a march, you have to bring your sanitizer, you have to do this, you have to do that. And I said to myself, I don't think that I will go. But my heart was there.
Why?
Because I have my kids back there. And I wanted to show solidarity.
When you lived in the United States, what was your experience like?
Well, my experience, I had a very good experience, actually. I was one of those persons that I did what I had to do. I never go out there and do stuff out of the ordinary. I have to go to work, I go to work. I have to go shopping, I go shopping. And I stay in my space. I do the things that I want to do. And that's how I survive in the United States.
And
I always warn my kids, always obey the law, regardless to what, obey the law. From what I see here in Barbados, and this is my country that I love and I return, I always wanted to come back here. I built my home here, and I'm here living. But I realize that once you stand up for what you believe in Barbados, everybody victimize you. Go back where you come from. But if everybody go back to the United States, we are the ones that bring in the foreign currency, you know. Yes, the big corporations do bring in foreign currency, but we bring in foreign currency, maybe on a small scale, but we bring in foreign currency. But then to hear your own tell you, go back to where you come from. But meantime, when you're going, they want you by this, they want you by that, you know what I'm saying?
So you've had the experience of people telling you that?
Of course. Of course. Once you stand up for what you believe in, Barbadians always say, go back to where you come from. I'm a proud Barbadian. I have no problem with my country. What the problem that I have is when Barbadians cannot stand up for what they believe, and once you do it, you are wrong. That is what I do not understand.
Let me give you an example of the concerns that people raise. People believe, from what I'm picking up, many people believe in the government's BOSS program and the attempt to stimulate this economy through a capital works program. But some people are asking, who are the real beneficiaries of that? Let me ask you whether you believe at the end of the day that we will see the emergence of another company, a major company, that deals with road construction, house building, that sort of thing. Until we can see that, we will continue to feel that we have something to worry about. We need to be able to see that there is that fairness, that kind of leveling of the playing field. And those of you who sit down in this country and see that every day and don't believe that that is something that we need to talk about, you're fooling yourselves.
Well, I don't understand, Mr. Ellis, though, and I'm not getting into the bonds and stuff like that because that's out of my range, but what I do not understand that the government workers waited a long time to get a raise in salary. And then once you get this little raise in salary, now you have to go back and buy into this and buy into that. And then, there, you know, you haven't got a raise in so many years, and now that you get a little something to just do a little something more for yourself, it's like it's being taken away from you. I understand the struggles that the country is going through right now. I understand all that, but that is something that kind of bothers me.
Yeah, but the problem has to do with the big picture. This is where we are. We were in a situation prior to COVID that required action.
Right.
Since COVID, it has become even more serious.
And I understand that too.
And the options are limited. Let's accept that. The options are limited. And somebody, I think all of us, have to make more of a sacrifice. There are people in the private sector who for over 12 years really didn't get an increase in salary. 12
okay.
years.
Mr. Ellis, let me ask you though, what would be the reason? I know that we have COVID. Yes, we are dealing with COVID at this time. So what would be the reason though that they would only want 10 persons to stand in solidarity? To me, that is crazy. 10 persons? Yes, we know, and a march can happen with people. You just have to know how to separate them. And people know we're dealing with COVID. They know how to separate themselves. So to go over there with 10 persons, I think that was kind of like waste of time. And that's how
I see it differently. I believe that many people would recognize that in the COVID era, you need to be cautious in that area. And therefore, the 10 may well be quite representative of quite a lot of people who share the sentiment.
Right.
So to do it is to show that solidarity and to essentially say to other people, look, I'm here representing you. So I don't have a problem with that aspect of it.
Okay.
I think that what you're seeing in the United States is there are different messages that are being sent. Part of it is about race.
Race, yes.
Part of it is about police.
Brutality.
Police behavior. Because truth be told, yeah, in many countries, police behave the same way, you know.
It's
about power.
Our mouth on Saturday, and that's how I feel.
It's about power. How you wield power. And over the years, how the society has fashioned the police force in various countries to do their job. And many people, fool not yourself, many people who have that power abuse it and get away with it.
Yes.
You know, and I am not, you know, I may be accused of mixing these messages, but I do believe that Black Lives Matter.
And I do believe that all life matters.
Everywhere.
Yes. Last night,
a friend of mine lost his son to gun violence. In this country, not in the United States.
Yes.
It happened here. All right?
Yes, please.
And he wasn't shot by a white policeman. He was shot by a Black person.
Right.
All right?
Yes.
So I'm saying to you that we need to be, no, I will suggest to you, that what I've seen over the years, in my perspective, is that some of what we are seeing play out in this and other Caribbean societies may definitely have a link to how the society has been structured. And you and I know full well that many of our young men have bought into some of the worst aspects of what has been happening in the ghetto in the United States.
So you find that
America has its problems, which would lead to more blacks dying from COVID and that sort of thing. A sense that prevails right now that Black people are not treated fairly. And then there's a behavior that goes with that. and then our people here. So that's why the solidarity is important, because our young men here go to the States and come back. They also go online and come back. You know, they listen to the music and come back. And they bring the same behavior. And they feel that there's no fairness, no justice. I've heard that over the years. They talk about the double standards in society. So it is important to identify with what is happening in the U.S. because remittances are not the only thing that we bring back. You know, we bring back behavior.
Fair enough.
Okay, ma'am.
Anyway, thanks for listening to me.
Thank you very much for calling.
No problem, sir.
Have a wonderful day. Hello, down to brass tacks.
Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Hi, this is Glenn Murray.
Yes, Glenn.
How are you doing? Good?
I'm okay.
Good. I thought I'd like to make a few observations on this Black Lives Matter phenomenon.
Yeah.
But first of all, I'd like to make some references to the local and national situation at the period last Saturday. Listening to what has been the back and forth on it, it seems to me that the people have spoken in terms of a demonstration, of a march, but I'm pretty sure the police gave opening for a demonstration, which are two different issues, two different events. And I know from my dealings with the police over the years, you have to be very precise in what you ask, where you want it for, the time, etc. And therefore, when they heard that they want to have 10%, limited 10%, I forget what that, just a symbolic token gesture, given the COVID situation, and that would be enough. But I think people seem to have had ideas of replicating and seeing the kind of images that we saw from other parts of the world almost happened in Barbados on the Barbados scale. So I think that the police, I know from, I feel can only, I don't think the police is being fairly criticized, because I think they went by what was said the agreement was. And maybe the organizers in future need to get a clear spell of how do you operate, what does it mean in action. But from the time I heard him say that they have 10 and then rotate 10, I said, that is not going to work. So I thought I'd leave it from that perspective. But I also want to talk about internationally. From time to time, I've made references to an issue and a phenomenon called, and a theory called wisdom of crowds.
The first four is always
where people, without consultation, all over any communication, connection, discussion, come to the same conclusion. I think this is a manifestation before my eyes of it. I saw a similar thing happen in Barbados in the 2018 election, but I think it's even more graphic, where people from across the world have reacted in the same way because the message resonates with them. I think the reason why it has grown, gathered so much support over countries and languages and cultures, etc., and kind of that, in every society there are remnants and residues and examples of the same thing that has happened in the United States: police brutality, mistreatment, racism, ostracism, all those kind of things that people feel they are repressed, all those things that happen across. And therefore, people responded to it in that manner. In addition, I think when coupled with the virtual existential threat, the threat to our existence by COVID, I think it might have shaken people to realize this. We have two issues at stake here which we have to deal with, both threatening our existence. And we have to take them all in a similar, strong manner. And therefore, I'd like to think that is what we are seeing before.
Right? I think there's a third factor.
I'd like to hear yours.
I think there's an anti-Trump sentiment going on, too.
Okay.
I don't think that you should see this in isolation of the political situation in the United States.
Okay.
And the president himself has not helped by the way that he's handled the situation. So he's kind of helping to mobilize that kind of negative position against
him. Yeah, interesting perspective. I was only seeing it from sociological terms and whatnot. But what I'm also concerned about is what happens next. I think the success of the movement has rattled people. Some people, as a result of the success, will feel challenged, threatened. The status quo will be under pressure. And I think we can therefore expect that people in diverse countries can expect some kind of backlash in their own country, in their own terms, in their own manner. But I think also what needs to be, apart from the marching and the slogans that one, I think it'd be interesting to see if this takes on more concrete, more permanent, structured form, and whether it is translated into individual entities across countries, or whether there's anything, it'll be an attempt to see whether there's an international liaison or coalition of it. So I think we're into a very interesting phase. And I look to see whether each country will have its leader, or whether it might be an international leader.
I really don't expect to see this international coalition. I believe that many people are looking at the United States to see how much reform there's likely to be within the police forces of the United States, and then within the society itself. Remember, this matter here runs deep. It goes back many years. There have been other episodes of people protesting and that sort of thing, but we haven't had any real formal, deep-seated and formal approach to trying to change it. It may happen, no, because what you're seeing is what Barack Obama referred to as a coalition. You're seeing a broader coalition of people, and it's not just black people out there on the streets, but there are whites as well, who are saying, we are concerned about this issue too.
That's what I mean. If you look at a country like Australia, for example, it seems to resonate very deeply in Australia, given its history with its mistreatment of the Aborigines, etc. In Europe in general, they're immigrants, they're refugees who themselves have had a history of mistreatment, etc., by the police, etc. So therefore, in virtually every country, they're ground down for it to resonate and create the kind of groundswell that it has. And then I just look to see whether there'd be a philosophy emerging from it, or whether it'd be just something that came to meet a particular need and then subsides. Thank you, David.
All right, thank you very much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. This is Down to Brass Tacks. I've got a couple of messages here. This person says that they want to report a leaking fire hydrant at Jackman's Road in St. Michael, which is near to Kelsey's supermarket. They are saying that this is leaking very, very quickly. That's what they're saying. But the leak is apparently a bad one. Essentially, that's what they're saying. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hey, morning, David.
Yes, morning.
Hey. It's Ralph Prescott here. When I hear some of your callers, I smile with amusement. On January 23rd, 1963, Malcolm X, in speaking to Michigan State University, gave a description of the difference between the two types of Negroes, the house Negro and the field Negro. I mean, people seek to set an agenda as to what a person in this country should protest against without seeing the relevance and the connection to the loss of black lives over the world, and sees in their opinion there's no significance to what happened or attempted to happen on Saturday. I am utterly amused. So many black men have lost their lives in the United States at the hands of police. And in a lot of the instances, the police officers were found not guilty, and that was the end of it. So I asked myself this question: what's the difference between George Floyd and so many of those people who were killed? And I've concluded that the difference was a lack of leadership, political leadership, judicial leadership, leadership at all levels. And I think that black people in the United States and all over the world has decided that enough is enough and we need to take action. Because clearly we can see that the leader of the free world has no care, none whatsoever, for black people. And therefore, if police are allowed to kill people the way that we are seeing it happening over and over again, somebody needs to take a stand and somebody needs to say enough is enough. And if people want to do it for water, want to do it for taxes, then that is not a problem. But don't try to set a person's agenda because you don't see it significant, because you do not understand your history. And it really upsets me when people call this program and make these these nonsensical statements.
Well,
I'm not a regular caller, but I had to see him.
Well, I must tell you that any day that you listen to Brass Tacks, you're going to find somebody who will make a contribution that will infuriate you, whether it is the callers or people like me, the moderators, okay? I think that this is an opportunity for us to think deeply about where we are as a people and what it will take to give us the kind of advancement that we need. Here in Barbados, the government is talking about this initiative to try to educate people and to get more people to have a certain degree of pride in self and to recognize that we have to change the way that we do things. You know, it's not going to be easy to achieve. But part of the reason why we behave the way we do has a lot to do with our history.
Or understanding that history.
Yes. Yes. And
because a lot of people don't understand their history.
And to be able to appreciate that there are elements of that remain within the society. It wasn't long ago, for instance, that Strathclyde was separated by stones.
Or Belleville.
All right.
I have articles in my collection still that I wrote to the Commodore of the Yacht Club, because before, I'm not sure if he's still alive, but before Ombudsman Inc. had walked the beaches and asked for the wall to come down, I remember vividly, instead of taking on the wall, they put a gate and closed it at 6 o'clock. And I wrote the Nation. I still have them. Because I had to advocate these things. The wall is now down. But there was a time when you couldn't walk from Coast Guard Beach, as you do now, right up to Radisson Wall. Because before 6 o'clock, well, before the wall came down, you had to go through the sea. And as a black person, you couldn't go across there. And then after the ombudsman spoke about it, they put a gate, which they locked at 6 o'clock. And even that, for me, was not acceptable. So the wall was bulldozed. And now you can walk straight up. But people forget these things. There are people who have not lived that period. Their parents have not told them about that period, so they don't know. So it makes no difference to them. But like I tell you, I'm familiar with those things because I live close to Belleville, and I know there were times that you can walk across Belleville. Otherwise, white people set the dogs on you. So people got to understand the history.
You also have to look at issues of economic power and how the economic power is actually exercised in the country, the extent to which over the years you would have heard about the various merchants that existed on Roebuck Street. And
correct.
Where are those people now? And what are the forces that are working against the advancement of people? Now, we have a lot of people right now who are out there selling this and selling that. The entrepreneurial spirit is not dead, but what are the factors that are working against those people being able to move forward? What are the psychological issues that we face that stop people from being able to pool resources, like as we've done so successfully with the credit union movement? If we could do that with the credit union movement and create cooperatives in that way, what is stopping us from doing that in other areas as well?
Well, I think sometimes greed and a lack of understanding is create some of the problems that we as black people face. Because you talk about cooperatives, I'm in the process or have started the process of basically setting up one. But people are fearful of investing, black people. They're fearful of taking a loss, because they say they can't afford it. When I hear you ask somebody about the BOSS program, I look at it, I try to analyze it. To me, it is something that I will invest in. Everybody may not be able to. But check the other side of the coin. The government rolls out the program regardless, offers it to public servants. They refuse. It goes on to the market, through the central bank or whoever. White people buys it up and profits 10 years or 7 years from now. Later on, you'll hear people saying that the government didn't provide for the economic enfranchisement for black people. But it is up to you whether you take that off or not. It is, if you can't afford it, I can understand. But if you can, it is up to you whether you're willing to take that challenge and invest. How many people are willing to take that chance?
Well, I think that you need to look at this from two angles. Because one is that the government is doing its own stimulus program. And as I said before, it is taking the money from, essentially, from out of the money that would normally be going into the private sector, whether they put it on the bank or they go and spend it or whatever, and then using that money to create this stimulus program and these jobs. But what is also required is that the private sector itself, people out there in the community, become more involved in creating the opportunities. You see, in 2018, not for the first time, we were told about the importance of private sector-led growth.
Agree.
And if we believe in that, then we should not only be speaking about the government stimulus, but we should also be talking about how are you going to stimulate people out there to become more involved in the cooperative process, being more trusting of each other, you know, and ultimately helping to fashion the new Barbados that can be created coming out of COVID and all that we've been through before. You do not want to continue in the same old way where it seems as though, you know, just this small group of people dominate the economic landscape of Barbados. And you can point to very few examples of the majority of the people in the country who have been able to pool their resources and create something that is meaningful.
And that's what we need, more persons willing to take that chance, pool their resources, and find ways to help lift the economy.
Right. And we need to believe that Black Lives Matter, not just from the perspective of trying to stop people from being killed, but from the point of view of trying to nurture the things that are positive to make us better as a people and as a country. That is really where this movement has got to go much deeper than calling for reforming the police force.
Advocacy has to continue not only when people lose their lives,
yes,
but in also showing the same Black people how they can make better of their lives by investing, by getting involved, like you said, in cooperatives. And we have to continue this advocacy.
Yes, and friends and families can also work together to achieve more. When you hear the Prime Minister talk about the amount of money that is lying dormant in Barbados, and then you extend that to the region as a whole, you realize the capacity that exists within this country and within this region, that if we did it the right way, we'd be able to mobilize a lot of resources. But instead, we don't have that kind of trust and confidence. And this is what we need to use the opportunity to create.
And that's where the lack of unity between Caribbean states comes in. We talk about solidarity, but we seem to have that fear in uniting.
But the fear is born out of our history.
Well,
have you ever read a piece by a man called Willie Lynch? Willie Lynch was a plantation owner who went into the Carolinas and basically said, look, I'm going to teach you how to get these people to behave in the way that you want them to.
How to control them.
How to control them. Because, and when you look at a lot of what is happening and how people talk and think and that sort of thing, you realize it continues to play out like that. So how are we going to reach more people in the boardroom, and on the street. You know, in the 1990s, I remember when there was all this talk about economic enfranchisement in Barbados. And people were given the hope that once you became well-educated, you ought to be able to sit on the boards of this country and be able to see your opportunity in business and all of that. You know, it would really be interesting for somebody to do a study. You know who should do it? The University of the West Indies should do the study and tell us what progress have we seen since then. Because anecdotally, it doesn't look as though you're seeing that. So what are we going to do? We are not here to preach racial hatred. What you're seeking to do is to get the people, the majority of the people in the country, to understand what power lies within them and how much better we can be. That's how I feel that way.
I think people only realize how much power lies within them when it's time to vote. Outside of that, they seem to forget the power that they have in their hands.
Yeah, but the voting thing is interesting as well, because those who already have the money, that small group of people, are able to help finance the election campaigns. And after they have...
They call it sometimes influence.
Right, and after they have done that, then the politicians have to reward them for the support that they have received. And that is why you find that there is no real change, notwithstanding the rhetoric that you will hear from time to time. So that is our reality. And the question is, how can this society bring about change without social chaos and social upheaval? So the same issue that obtains in the United States, where they now have to look and see, now how are we going to give greater power and recognition to people who have been marginalized? How are those people going to work to achieve it? You know, I was a bit shocked because, I mean, I didn't know about the situation in 1921 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when these blacks in the United States had built up a community where they had banks, they had stores. They were seen as being progressive in that regard. And there was an incident that caused the whites around them to go and burn down the whole town. All right? But it was kept quiet for many, many years. It was covered up. But it is an example of what you can achieve. If, I mean, in a country like this, we've achieved a lot. But we got to give more young people hope. If we don't do that, we're in trouble. You know, we need to sit down and look for solutions. And that's why I listen to what the government is saying about the BOSS program. I sincerely hope that ultimately it is aimed at giving people a greater stake and an opportunity to be part of the building of this economy. But there are a lot of naysayers who, as happened with the National Bank issue, when the National Bank shares were made available, there was a lot of criticism. To this day, there are people who feel we made an error. You know, so
yeah.
Got to take we need to study this stuff, but we've got to take advantage of the opportunities that exist. Otherwise, we will have nothing. We will not grow, and the country needs.
Well, I hope it works out for the best. However it goes, but I hope it works out for the best, David.
Mm-hmm.
And I will continue listening.
All right, my friend.
It was nice talking to you.
Thank you very much for calling. This is Down to Brass Tacks.